Today we're going to create a mashup, a fun and adventurous way to make something fresh out of something stale.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If there is a heaven, I hope they hold a special place for people like me. Not hot, but you know, just a little warmer. Where I'm not forced to sing the same songs over and over again a million times. Where I'm not expected to listen to people give long sermons that are not profound. Where I don't have to hear hypocrites tell me not to do the same things that they do themselves. Where I don't have to re-meet everyone I've already met on earth like some high school reunion that never ends. Where I don't have to talk to beings with giant wings and act like I think that's cool or fashion forward. And since we're on the subject, I don't know how I feel about halos. Because I've always felt that light should shine from the inside out. So if there is a heaven, I hope they hold a special place for people like me. Not hot, but you know, just a little warmer. Where I'm not expected to float around aimlessly like I had some type of frontal lobotomy. Where I'm not expected to smile and laugh all day like I'm trying to OD on magic mushrooms. Where my entire existence isn't planned out like when to talk, when to sleep, when to pray, like I'm sentenced to some eternal penitentiary. I just want to be free. And I've always been confused because if God made us individuals, then how does what constitutes heaven for me also constitute what's heaven for you? I mean, you might want to fly around and play a harp and things or explore the countryside, meet new souls and play games. But me, I just want my aura to increase. And when I return to the essence, I want to rest in peace. So, if there is a heaven, I hope there's a special place for people like me. Not hot, but you know, just a little warmer. Because when it's over, what I want most is that sweet release. And what I want most for you is just an eternity of whatever you would consider to be peace.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Security guards chase a naked USA fan around the White House. Jennifer Lopez announces her own clothesline line, and a grandpa reports there's more ginger ale in the garage. I won't waste your time with a needless self-serving introduction. This is the Onion Week in Review. President Obama releases a new tell-all book about America. The 800-page book titled Oh Say Have I Seen, The Real Truth Behind the Red, White, and Blue details numerous shocking revelations about the American people, including its inability to manage finances, struggles with oil addiction, and frequent battles with obesity.
While America may appear strong and confident on the outside, the reality is much different. The things I've seen, the greed, the excess, the unbelievable vanity, would make most people think twice about referring to America as the greatest country in the world.
In an interview Monday, Obama said the tell-all was something he had to get off his chest, given the fact that he was abused by America for several years. In science news, archaeologists have uncovered the remains of an ancient race of job creators in America's Rust Belt. Scientists say the long-forgotten civilization once flourished between New York State and Illinois, erecting large brick and steel structures capable of holding hundreds of paid workers at a time. Several of the ancient empire's grandest settlements, including Gary, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh, once supplied entire communities with lifelong employment, researchers say, although sadly this way of life died out some time ago. A new Facebook feature released this week allows users to cancel their account. Touting it as the latest step in the company's overall effort to enrich the way people connect and share, Facebook called the feature an exciting new level of user interactivity.
We want to give Facebook users a level of control they've never had before, and allowing them to delete their account is a big step in that direction.
Facebook representatives say that in the wake of their new site redesign, now is as good a time as any to introduce the new account deleting feature.
Voices in the headlines, the sounds of the news this week gathered from around the world by the staff of ABC News. I'm George Caldwell, ABC News, New York.
I can tell you, and tell you now, that I am prepared to veto any bill that has as its purpose a federal bailout of New York City to prevent a default. I am fundamentally opposed to this so-called solution.
The message by President Ford at the Washington Press Club on Wednesday seemed to complete the final chapter in New York City's failing attempt at heading off bankruptcy before the end of the year. The president explained why he would not allow federal money to be used to prevent New York City's financial collapse.
Any attempt to provide a federal blank check for the leaders of New York City would ensure that no long-run solution to the city's problems will ever occur.
Instead, President Ford said he would submit to the Congress special legislation giving the federal courts authority to preside over an orderly reorganization of New York City's financial affairs should the city go bankrupt.
In the event of default, the federal government will work with the court to assure that police and fire and other essential services for the protection of life and property in New York are maintained.
The president was also sharply critical of Mayor Abraham Beam and his predecessors.
Certainly, I do not blame all the good people of New York City for their generous instincts or for their present plight. I do blame those who have misled the people of New York about the inevitable consequences of what they are doing or were doing over the last 10 years.
The president said the people of the U.S. would not be stampeded or panicked by a few desperate New York officials and bankers trying to scare New York's mortgage payments out of them. New York's Mayor Beam was quick to react, saying the president's speech was nothing less than a declaration of impending default.
The president, in opting to do nothing to prevent the city of New York from facing the consequences of being unable to meet its debt obligations, has created a climate of crisis and confusion, which, if unchanged, will lead directly to a default.
Mayor Beam's angry response was echoed by New York Governor Hugh Carey.
After deliberately ignoring every painful step we have taken to undo the errors of the past, Mr. Ford suggests that we could avoid default on our own. This is fiscal illiteracy. If we convene the special session of the legislature of this state tonight at midnight and tripled our taxes, if we cut every human being off the city payroll tomorrow, we could not avoid default.
On Thursday, Governor Carey held another news conference and said President Ford's plan to help New York City solve its financial troubles would make the city a ward of the federal court and would also cost American taxpayers not less than $500 million for the first 3 months after New York's collapse.
A leading legal expert looked at it overnight, and these words are his, not mine, but I think they are adequate to describe the bill. He said the words of the bill are the words of Archie Bunker, and the music of the bill is the melody of Herbert Hoover.
Governor Carey then called on New Yorkers to turn out at a mass rally to show the nation that they were ready to fight back.
We're going to take a day, and we're going to turn out New York City. And we're going to form all over this town, and we're going to invite the people in from the suburbs as well who have a stake in New York. And whether it's in Times Square or in Central Park or in all of the places where people gather, we're going to sound off in behalf of this great city.
For people who want to play their part in the Occupy movement but don't feel like hitting the streets, Saturday is the date to act. It's officially Bank Transfer Day and Move Your Money Day, both of which aim to deprive the big banks of their customers. Well, let's cross to freelance writer Kimberly Thorpe in the U.S. now for some insight. Kimberly, well, first of all, how does this financial movement work? What is it that people are being asked to do?
Well, today is Bank Transfer Day, and that's started by an artist in Los Angeles, and it's a spin on a movement that's called Move Your Money that has been going on for the last couple of years. In the first 3 months of Move Your Money, some $5 billion in accounts were transferred. Today, over 81,000 people have pledged their support to go to their banks and move their money to a credit union, a smaller bank. Of course, this takes time, but within a few days, we should kind of see how successful this movement was or not.
They've been camped out across the country, including right here in Richmond.
But the Occupy Wall Street protests right here in Richmond came to a grinding halt overnight around 1 o'clock this morning as police broke up the site at Canal Plaza. Our Shelby Brown is live there now with the very latest. Shelby.
Good morning, Reba and Rob. Well, it was a wake-up call. These occupiers didn't expect. Many of them were in their tents sleeping here in Kanawha Plaza. This happened a little more than 4 hours ago, and let me just show you what's happening now. The activity has really dwindled. You can still see a police car here blocking off Canal right here at 9th and Canal. You can see this one lone protester still standing on the street holding his sign, and just behind him over in the park, they've turned out the lights now, but crews were there cleaning up. They had bulldozers removing the tents and the debris and all of the signage and everything. Police wasted no time going into the park to kick the group out. Now, dozens of people have been camping out in Kanawha Plaza for about 2.5 weeks. Well, of course, that came to an end at 1 o'clock this morning when police on horseback and police in cars rolled up, about 50 of them. They moved in on about 30 sleeping protesters. They used bullhorns to announce their arrival and to tell the crowd which law was being violated. The group got about 45 minutes or so to pack up their tents and their belongings and get out. Some of the occupiers complied and gathered their things. Others who did not move were arrested by police, and that was about a handful of protesters. Again, crews were in there with the bulldozers.
You get a lot of junk mail. I do. Most of the junk mail I get is unsolicited credit card offers, and up until Occupy Wall Street, I used to just toss these in the bin unopened. But Occupy Wall Street got me thinking. These offers are from the same financial institutions that ruined our economy by speculating on the housing market. This isn't junk mail. This is an opportunity for a dialogue. Why? Well, see, inside every one of these credit card offers is one of these. It's a business reply mail envelope. The banks sign contracts with the post office to get these envelopes, and they only pay postage on the envelopes that get mailed back. Now, the banks are assuming that we'll use these envelopes to send in our credit card applications, but we don't want more credit cards, do we? We certainly don't want them from the big banks that caused the financial crisis. But we can use these envelopes in other ways. We can have a dialogue. So, phase one, this is the easiest. Everyone can do this. Just take the envelope, lick it, seal it, and send it back empty. It's quick, it's easy, it takes you 5 seconds at the mailbox every day, and it costs the bank about 25 cents. Now I know, that means banks pay less for postage than we do, but please, let's have that protest another day. Now, phase two, if you're willing to put a little more work into it, would be to send it back full. Just take all the materials that came in the envelope, put them in there, take the envelope itself, put that in there. I mean, after all, the heavier the envelope is, the more it's going to cost them in postage. And then any other junk mail you got that day that you think might be interesting to them. Like, I got this baby products catalog, and I'll put that in there. I mean, bankers have babies, and being immoral doesn't mean you're infertile. The other thing that I do is I send them a note. I printed out a bunch of notes on my printer, and I just clip them out, and I put one in with each envelope. That way, they know that this wasn't just a miscommunication. It actually was communication. This one says, "Hello, big bank clerk. Please join a union." these three, if you're willing to put a little bit of money into it, and I do mean a little bit, would be a wood shim. This is a wood shim. It's exactly what it looks like. It's a piece of wood. You can get a pack of 12 of these at a hardware store for about $1.50. Now, a wood shim, when you put that into the envelope, oh, and put a message on it too, so that it's actually communication. This one is hashtag OWS for Occupy Wall Street. Put the shim in the envelope, and suddenly the envelope becomes really heavy, and more importantly, it becomes rigid. Why does that matter? Well, a rigid mail piece costs more in postage to mail. That's why Netflix has to pay more money for their DVD mailers than like you pay to send a postcard. You can go further with this idea. I think the gold standard for postage paid protest would be something like a roofing shingle, because that's really heavy and dense and crumbly. But it's important that this should be about communication. So I think that putting some sort of message, you know, clear, rational, debate, a slogan, something you saw in a good sign, I think that that matters too. Think about the scene in a mailroom at a big bank when they get a few dozen roofing shingles, a few hundred wood shims, and a few thousand empty envelopes. They're probably going to have a meeting about it. And that's the point of this. This isn't really about running up the postage bill in the big banks, although that's a nice side effect. The real effect of this is to force banks to react to us. If they start getting hundreds and thousands of weird responses to their credit card applications, well, they're going to have meetings. They're going to have to develop new procedures. And every hour banks spend reacting to us is an hour banks don't spend lobbying Congress on how to screw us. It's an hour banks don't spend foreclosing on our houses. So I think that that's progress. Now, this postage paid protest sort of thing, this is no substitute for getting out into the street and making your voices heard. The Occupy Wall Street movement started in the street, and for the time being, that's where the life of this protest is. But after you've been out there lending your voice to the crowd, or if you happen to live in a city that's away from the big cities that are having major Occupy movements, go to your mailbox, spend 5 seconds sorting through your junk mail, and send some stuff back to these guys. If you can't occupy Wall Street, you can at least keep Wall Street occupied.
But I see a future where we're all in one big tent together talking on cell phones to people in some other tent somewhere. And I see a future where poverty and starvation have been eliminated from all news coverage. I see a future where there are no wars, just corporate-sponsored police actions with play-by-play on ESPN. And I see a future where concern for privacy is a thing of the past, because privacy, my friends, is a thing of the past. I see a future where major motion pictures are nothing but bald-faced hour-and-a-half-long commercials for talking toys and automatic weapons. And I see a future where we never have to handle anything again. We just buy stuff over the internet and have someone else throw it away for us. One world, one bank, one insurance provider. One big media conglomerate run by one megalomaniac for your safety and convenience. I see a future where children of every race and creed and color have equal opportunity to make running shoes for 12 cents an hour. Where all obstacles to human development, rainforests, environmentalism, ethics, have been washed away forever, where one man with guts and determination and an idea that could revolutionize the automobile industry can disappear without a trace. I see a future where slavery is good again. And I see a future of licensed merchandise and fast food tie-ins where even the second coming is cross-promoted. Get it? In one world, one bank, one processed food provider. One big healthcare conglomerate run by one greedy bastard for your safety and convenience. Ooh. I thought I was alone. I see a future where people's diversity is recognized and squelched at an early age, where all of humanity is united in the fight against whatever horrifying issue we've disturbed trying to colonize space. I see a future where the image of Gandhi is used to sell a computer. Wait, that happened already, and I see a future where Iraq does not have the bomb, and Korea does not have the bomb, and Pakistan does not have the bomb, and Microsoft does. In one world, one sperm bank, one assisted suicide provider, one big maximum security theme park run by the same guy who tells the president what to say for your safety and convenience. Yeah, for our safety and sing it with me as if you had no voice. For our safety and convenience. Our convenience.
Having an earthquake right now. Our lights shaking quite a bit here. It is now calming down as another earthquake has just hit. I still hear a few lights rattling here in our studio. And we still have our, if you can see our Duratran back here, I don't know if you can see it behind us, still shaking here in Oklahoma City. We do not know the epicenter as it just now happened. And we will continue to gather information for you, obviously, as this is a second large earthquake here in central Oklahoma today, the other early this morning.
The industry-wide secret butchers don't want you to know about. Major suppliers have been caught using a special product known as meat glue to stick together scraps of meat to sell as prime cuts. But while this product has been banned overseas, there's no law prohibiting its use here. Here's Rodney Lowes with this special investigation.
It's the meat industry's dirty secret, a way of turning the scraps too small to sell as a premium steak back into a juicy, plump eye fillet to sell for a premium price. So clever, you'll never tell. Not even an expert can.
Before, you didn't even pick that as a join, though, did you?
It doesn't even tear through the join. Bit hard to tell, isn't it?
Butcher James Faulkner runs Queensland Natural Beef Company, an organisation dedicated to using as few additives in meat from paddock to plate as possible. But tonight, he's exposing how some parts of the industry are able to trick their customers and use whatever it takes.
Yeah. I've just got some fine diced beef and my special enzyme. I'm just going to mix it up a bit.
Why have we got the masks on?
Because it's dangerous. See that? Don't breathe that in.
This powder is transglutaminase enzyme, otherwise known as meat glue. Meat glues come in a number of forms, some produced by cultivating bacteria, the others, the primary ingredient comes from the blood plasma of pigs and cattle, specifically the coagulant which causes blood to clot. In the food industry, it has amazing properties.
So just got a little bit here, about a teaspoonful.
Yep.
Just over the top like that, and with our gloves on, of course, we mix it up.
Then roll it in plastic film and refrigerate. 6 hours later, you have a solid piece of meat.
And essentially, you've got a reborn, rebirth thigh fillet.
More or less, yeah.
Ours uncooked is easy to spot the difference, but cooked is another story.
Okay, so the meat glue one is on the right, and the real McCoy is on the left.
And it's not just beef. Pork, lamb, fish and chicken are all stuck back together using this glue.
Feeling a bit dozy this afternoon. I just took a fluoride shower. How about you, Will? Oh, no, that's right. You got rainwater, you lucky devil. It's so terrible, you know. Every time I wash my hands, I think, oh, gosh, it's the fluoride again. It soaks into your skin. It gets into the pores. It poisons you to no end, you know. It's not possible to not get poisoned. It's just so frustrating. Every time you go out and you try and eat, have something to eat, there's more poison. And then you go out, you know, to get something to buy so that you can make yourself, you know, not out of a packet. And what you have to buy comes out of more packets than the packet stuff that you tried to avoid in the first place. And you get four types of packet residue. It's insane. There's no choice. Oh, dear Lord, it hurts me so much in my brain places. I can guarantee you, I'm not the only one who gets driven mad by the fact that you can't not get poisoned. Even right now, at this very moment, as I speak into a microphone, I am being poisoned by EMF radiation or something. But isn't it freaking hilarious? And no matter what the heck you do, you get poisoned. And so everybody gets apathetic and says, hey, well, something's going to kill you anyway. As if doing it a little bit earlier ain't that bad, you know? Who cares if you don't get to see your grandchildren? It'll be all right. I'm sure they'll exist. Or maybe they won't. Maybe the children that you get born will die quicker anyway. And they won't get to see their grandchildren either. Who knows? Let's just have some fabulous, apathetic society that doesn't really give two flying Fs about anything sacred. Watches copious amounts of pornography. drinks up as much fluoridated water and fabulous fizzy soda pop drinks. Washed down with copious quantities of McDonald's. This is not a healthy society. This is a sick, brainwashed, zombified, obesity, diabetes-ridden, mental disorder, suffering society. In other words, simple phrase, effed in a single letter. We all know what the F word means, and that's what each and every single one of us is at this particular moment. Because everything's so effed up that we could not be more effed than we currently are now. But wait, actually we could be. If we do F all about it. But conveniently, there are people like myself and copious amounts of other people, a plethora, if you will, a veritable mercenary army on tap, like yourselves.
Hell exists. I happen to believe in life after death, but I don't think it's got a thing to do with reward and punishment. Religion is always in the control business, and that's something people don't really understand. It's in the guilt-producing control business. And if you have heaven as a place where you're rewarded for your goodness and hell as a place where you're punished for your evil, then you sort of have control of the population. And so they create this fiery place, which has quite literally scared the hell out of a lot of people throughout Christian history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of a control tactic.
But wait a minute, you're saying that hell, the idea of a place under the earth or somewhere where you're tormented for an eternity, is actually an invention the church?
I think the church fired its furnaces hotter than anybody else. But I think there's a sense in most religious life of reward and punishment in some form. The church doesn't like for people to grow up, because you can't control grown-ups. That's why we talk about being born again. When you're born again, you're still a child. The people don't need to be born again. They need to grow up. They need to accept their responsibility for themselves and the world.
What do you make of the theology, which is pretty quite prominent these days in America, which is that there is one guaranteed way not to go to hell, and that is to accept Jesus as your personal Savior?
Yeah, I grew up in that tradition. Every church I know claims that we are the true church, and they have some ultimate authority. We have the infallible Pope, we have the inerrant Bible. The idea that the truth of God can be bound in any human system, by any human creed, by any human book, is almost beyond imagination for me. I mean, God is not a Christian. God is not a Jew or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Buddhist. All of those are human systems which human beings have created to try to help us walk into the mystery of God. I honor my tradition. I walk through my tradition. But I don't believe my tradition defines God. I think it only points me to God.
You and I are emerging people, not fallen people. Our problem is not that we are born in sin. Our problem is we do not yet know how to achieve being fully human. The function of the Christ is not to rescue the sinners, but to empower you and to call you to be more deeply and fully human than you've ever realized there was the potential within you to be. Maybe salvation needs to be conveyed in terms of enhancing your humanity rather than rescuing you from it.
Life is a startling and wondrous experience, and eventually I think we're going to discover that God is unfolding through the life of our consciousness and our self-consciousness, and is not a parent figure up in the sky. But I believe, because I'm related to something that is not bound by time and space, that I will share in whatever God's eternity is.
Christianity is stupid. Christianity is stupid. Christianity. give up. Give up. Christianity is stupid. Communism is good. Give up. From 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. From 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. Give up. From 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night.
Shop as usual and avoid panic buying.
The footage about to be shown is disturbing.
Bend over the bed.
It shows a man allegedly beating his daughter who has cerebral palsy. Police are investigating the video that's caused global outrage.
We are right now trying to verify the authenticity of the video. We have made arrangements through the courts to subpoena the actual original of the video, and at that point we'll try to determine the people involved and what the nature of the incident was, when the video was made, who the people in it are, and so forth.
It's being claimed Texan Judge William Adams is the man in the video. A statement released on the county court website says it's aware of the footage. Hillary Adams says he beat her after she illegally downloaded music and videos. Judge Adams has been unavailable for comment.
Gun drawn and commands firing.
Put your hands out the window!
An FHP trooper pulls over a Miami police officer. Frisks him, cuffs him, and carts him to her cruiser. And during all of this, the Miami officer sounds just as shocked as she is mad.
Oh my God, I cannot believe this. I cannot believe this at all.
It began, unbelievably, just minutes before, with his police cruiser seen here passing by the trooper like she's standing still.
It is a Miami police.
She chases him, lights flashing, engine screaming. As she describes him weaving in and out of lanes, speeding up and slowing down at speeds topping 120 miles an hour, until both finally come to a tense stop 4 minutes 57 seconds later.
Put your hands out the window!
The Miami officer quickly complies, quickly apologizes.
I apologize, but I was on my way to an off duty. I didn't know you were stopping for me. I never saw you.
How do you not see a car with blue lights in the door?
Ma'am, with all due respect, I don't
respect me, sir.
Ma'am,
you don't respect these people out here.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
This
35-year-old Miami officer Fausto Lopez says he was heading to an off-duty job at a Coconut Grove school.
It's a private school, but there's some high-end people there.
And he says he was late.
And I had to get there by 7 o'clock, and I didn't think I was going to make it.
His highest concern now appeared to be the handcuffs.
Honestly, the handcuffs are not necessary, ma'am. I'm a police officer.
Police reports show for allegedly racing at a high rate of speed in excess of 120 miles per hour while being extremely reckless, Officer Lopez was cited with a misdemeanor moving violation.
You scared me crap. I thought that car, that police car was stolen.
And as shocking as all this may appear, what the trooper says here may be even more arresting.
This is not a first time occurrence with y'all.
What's
y'all
right?
Come from that way all the time. This Miami police car, and we never catch it.
Preparing for liftoff. This unmanned spacecraft is ready to launch. The Shenzhou 8 will dock with China's first space lab module known as Heavenly Palace 1. The exercise is all part of the country's effort to develop skills needed to run a full space station that could house astronauts for long stretches. This is one blast off of many, says China. The country's next step is an unmanned landing on the moon. Well, despite being far behind America and Russia, China seems eager to catch up.
The moon is rich in something so rare here that scientists can't even fully research it, a real-life unobtainium. It's called helium-3, and it can be used in nuclear fusion, the same process that powers the sun without causing any harmful pollution. And it's so powerful, a single fuel tanker load could power the US for a year. The Earth's atmosphere means the vast amounts of the gas spewed out by the sun pass us by. But on the moon, it settles. And the person who brings it back will be very, very rich. So high are the stakes that several private companies are already vying to build mines on the moon, using robots to scoop up the surface, process it, and ship it back to Earth. And when do they hope to start scouring the planet? 100 years' time? 50? No. One company, Astrobotic, want to do it by 2015. And this is the probe they're planning to send. Internet giant Google are offering £18 million to the first of 26 companies to send a private probe to the moon. If any of these new mining companies find what they're looking for, that will be mere peanuts.
Oh,
six-man crew of the Mars 500 experiment have completed their mission after 520 days spent in a simulator in Moscow. Never actually having made it to the Red Planet, the volunteers from Europe, China and Russia have been locked inside the windowless cell since June last year. The $15 million mission sought to answer one of the biggest questions of deep space travel, and that's whether astronauts can endure a voyage of more than 6 months.
Really scientific insight into the human evolution, you know, during such a mission from a health point of view, but also from a psychological point of view, and both aspects are often closely linked together.
While they haven't been exposed to weightlessness or solar radiation, everything else inside the 550 cubic metre mock spaceship has resembled that of a real flight. Communication with the outside world has come with a 20-minute delay, and the crew have faced power outages and other glitches, whilst researchers on the outside have scrutinised their behaviour. Halfway through the mission in February this year, two crew members donned spacesuits to enter a dark, sand-filled container meant to imitate the surface of the planet. Now that the crew are safely back to reality, Mars 500 is being hailed as a success, although psychologists fear their return will come as a shock to the crew, and only time will tell how easily they are able to rehabilitate back into everyday life. Scientists have captured the start of a massive iceberg after seeing a deep rift in Antarctica's Pine Island glacier. NASA's ISAT satellite has been monitoring the ice being lost in Antarctica for years, but this emerging crack was found by NASA's DC-8 aircraft on October the 14th. Images released from a follow-up mission on October the 26th show a close-up view of the crack. The NASA crew was able to create a three-dimensional map of the rift, showing it spans a length of about 18 miles and is about 820 feet apart at its widest. The Pine Island Glacier is called the weak underbelly of Antarctica, and it's thinning. But scientists say this type of cracking happens naturally every decade and is not related to global warming.
Close encounter of the aircraft carrier size. This asteroid is heading our way, although luckily not straight at us. 1,300 feet across of dense carbon rock, it's only got astronomers very excited.
This is the closest approach by an asteroid that large that we've ever known about in advance.
NASA scientist Lance Benner. This is the path 2005 YU-55 will take.
In effect, it'll be moving straight at us from one direction and then it'll go whizzing by and straight away from us in the other direction. So its motion across the sky will be close to 180 degrees over the course of less than 2 days.
And although it will miss us by more than 200,000 miles, it will pass between the Earth and the Moon. It may not be enough to send up Bruce Willis and his Armageddon team, but still close enough, the closest such encounter in at least 200 years. A rare chance to view such an object from the ground, radar telescopes in the US preparing for its flyby on Tuesday night. If it were to hit the Earth, it could wipe out London or New York, or if it landed in the sea, cause a 70-foot-high tsunami.
If today was not a crooked highway, if tonight was not a crooked trail, if tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to you at all. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, if I could hear her heart softly pounding, yes, and only if she was lying by me, then I'd lie in my bed once again. I can't see my reflection in the water, I can't speak the sounds to show no pain, I can't hear the echo of my footsteps or remember the sounds of my own name. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, and if I could only hear her heart softly pounding, yes, and only if she was lying by me, and I'd lie in my bed once again. There's beauty in that silver singing river, there's beauty in that rainbow in the sky, but none of these and nothing else can touch the beauty that I remember in my true love's eyes. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, if I could only hear a heart softly pounding, yes, and only if she was lying by me, and I'd lie in my bed once again.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
There's this idea called the gunas, and it's the modes of material, the material universe. In Hinduism, in some forms of Hinduism, the material universe gets broken up into three forms. It gets simplified into these three forms called the gunas, which is the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, and the mode of goodness. And so everyone is experiencing some version of these modes of being. So these modes, they attribute them to parts of the world. So cities are considered to be in the mode of passion. Places where things are rotting, like junk heaps, and places where there's a lot of death are considered to be in the mode of ignorance, and nature is considered to be in the mode of goodness. So there's symptoms of each of people who are in each of these modes. So people who are in the mode of ignorance, the symptoms are very similar to the symptoms of depression. They sleep too much. They sleep all the time. They eat shitty food. The way they put it is they eat dead things. But what that means is they're not eating things that are good for them. They're just eating things that are poison. Or the way they put it is they eat things that taste bad and make you feel bad. That's how they say it. Now, the mode of passion is, the symptoms of the mode of passion are, you want to fuck up, you want to make money, you're out there, you're working, you're Mike Tyson in his prime, you're just fully into the universe. And the way they put it is, you eat things that taste good, but that make you feel bad, is the way they put it. So you eat like people, you're drawn to like ish that like in the initially is like, you know, you're like doing like crazy ish. You're eating ecstasy, you know, that makes you feel good in the moment. But then the end result is you kind of like are hungover for half a week if you take impure, non-pharmaceutical grade MDMA, which would be awesome to have. Then the mode of goodness is, the way they put that is, you eat things that maybe don't taste so great initially, but then make you feel really good, that are really good for you, you know, like, some people would say initially when you start exercising, it's in the mode of goodness, because when you are going to convince your body to get out of bed and go for a jog, sometimes it's like, it's the best feeling on the planet. But when you first get going, it doesn't feel that great. You've got to like get your body to limber again and get out there again. But man, when the afternoon rolls around after a morning run and you feel your muscles are aching and your body's more relaxed than it's been, you feel great. So that's because you did something that could be considered in the mode of goodness. So to answer your question, I think depression is the modern terminology for people who have gotten themselves primarily in the mode of ignorance. And they, you know, they need to, a way to get out of the mode of ignorance is to, it sounds kind of obvious, but to begin to engage in things that are more in the mode of passion or the mode of goodness. So, you know, people will tell you, if you're feeling depressed, go jogging. Go jogging. Drink some smoothies. Take vitamins. Start taking care of your body. Clean your house. Depressed people have filthy houses. They inevitably, because they're literally laying in dead ish. You go to a depressed person's house, and there will inevitably be rotting food. They leave rotting food out, and they're filthy. And that's like what the mode of ignorance is. And the reason they're doing that is because they're avoiding taking care of things. They can't push themselves out of it.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.